Nemoto presents scientific giants. Fritz Haber, Bread from Air, Poison from Science. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Ava voice. Running time, approximately 12 minutes. You're listening to Scientific Giants Who Changed the World. Each episode stands beside one mind and follows a thread of curiosity until it ties to the world we inhabit. Today we meet a scientist whose legacy is so divided that it feels like two different biographies stitched into one name. His work helped feed billions. His work also helped poison battlefields. His life forces a question we would prefer to postpone. What does it mean to call a discovery good when it multiplies both life and death? His name is Fritz Haber. Haber was born in 1868 in Breslau, then part of Prussia, into a Jewish family in a society where Jewish identity carried both cultural richness and persistent exclusion. He grew up in the late 19th century, a period when Germany was becoming a powerhouse of industrial and scientific modernity. Chemistry was no longer only academic. It was national infrastructure. Dyes, fertilizers, explosives, pharmaceuticals. Chemistry was the bloodstream of empire. Haber wanted to belong. He wanted to be inside the German story, not at its edge. He converted to Christianity as an adult, a decision that was partly personal and partly social, a way of trying to remove a barrier in a world that insisted on categories. It did not ultimately protect him, but it reveals something about him. He believed in the state, in national purpose, in the idea that science and nation could align. His early work ranged across chemical problems, but his defining contribution emerged from a crisis that few people now remember in its original intensity, the nitrogen problem. Life depends on nitrogen. Proteins, DNA, and many essential molecules require it. The atmosphere is full of nitrogen gas, about 78%, but that nitrogen is bound in a form that most organisms cannot use. Plants need fixed nitrogen, ammonia, nitrates, compounds that can be absorbed and built into living tissue. For centuries, agriculture depended on natural sources of fixed nitrogen, manure, crop rotation with legumes, deposits of guano and nitrates mined from places like Chile. By the late 19th century, industrializing nations feared a bottleneck. Populations were growing. Fields were being pushed. The supply of natural nitrates looked finite. People began to worry about famine not as a distant medieval threat, but as a modern industrial limit. If you could take nitrogen from the air and turn it into ammonia at scale, you could create fertilizer independent of geography. You could feed millions more. You could stabilize agriculture. You could, in effect, expand the carrying capacity of civilization. This is where Haber enters with an idea that is simple in statement and brutal in execution. Nitrogen gas is stable. It does not want to react. To break it and bind it to hydrogen, you need extreme conditions, high temperature and high pressure, and a catalyst that can make the reaction feasible at industrial scale. Haber worked out a method to synthesize ammonia from nitrogen and hydrogen. The chemistry itself was known in principle, but not in a way that could be industrially useful. Haber's achievement was to find conditions and catalysts that made it work reliably. Then came the larger step, turning a laboratory method into a global machine. That industrial scaling was accomplished with Carl Bosch and the company BASF. The process became known as the Haber-Bosch process. If Haber's insight was the key, Bosch's engineering was the door. Together, they changed history. It is difficult to exaggerate what this meant. Synthetic fertilizer transformed agriculture. Yields rose. Food supply expanded. Demographic patterns shifted. Many historians argue that a significant fraction of the world's population today is alive because fixed nitrogen can be produced industrially. In that sense, Haber's discovery is one of the most life-sustaining in human history. And yet, almost immediately, the same ammonia chemistry carried a second implication. Fixed nitrogen is not only fertilizer. It is also a pathway to explosives. Nitrates are central to munitions. In World War I, the ability to produce ammonia helped Germany sustain its war effort despite blockades that limited access to natural nitrate supplies. Here, the double edge begins to sharpen. Haber was not a passive supplier of a neutral technology. He was deeply involved in Germany's war effort. He believed that in wartime, science should serve the nation. He did not see this as corruption. He saw it as duty. His most infamous role was in chemical warfare. The trench warfare of World War I created a nightmare of stagnation, armies locked in place, machines grinding bodies for meters of land. Military leaders searched for ways to break the stalemate. Haber became one of the leading proponents of poison gas. The argument for chemical weapons at the time often came wrapped in a moral rationalization. If gas could end the war faster, perhaps it would reduce total suffering. This is a common pattern in human reasoning, using a hypothetical future mercy to justify an immediate atrocity. Haber embraced this logic and helped develop chlorine gas attacks. In 1915, at the Second Battle of Ypres, chlorine gas was released, creating a greenish cloud that rolled into enemy trenches, burning lungs and turning breathing into drowning. It was a new kind of terror, invisible death carried by air. Haber himself was present to oversee the first large-scale release. This detail matters because it shows the depth of his commitment. He was not only designing from a safe distance, he was participating in the translation of chemical knowledge into battlefield horror. The personal consequences were severe. Haber's wife, Clara Immerwahr, was herself a chemist, one of the first women to earn a doctorate in chemistry in Germany. She opposed his work on chemical weapons. Their marriage was strained by more than domestic issues. It was strained by a moral rupture. Shortly after the first gas attack, Clara died by suicide, using Haber's pistol. The story is complex and must be treated with care, but it stands as a grim symbol. The cost of aligning science with violence can be paid inside homes as well as on battlefields. Haber returned to work quickly. The war machine does not pause for grief, and neither, in his case, did the sense of national mission. After the war, the world tried to define what had happened. Germany was defeated. Chemical weapons became internationally condemned even as they remained a temptation. Haber, despite his role, received the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1918 for the ammonia synthesis. The award was controversial. Some saw it as honoring a man associated with poison gas. Others argued that the Nobel recognized the fertilizer process, which had immense benefit. This split is the essence of Haber's legacy. You cannot speak his name without two opposing images arriving in the same breath. Then comes another historical irony, perhaps the cruelest. Haber had tried to become fully German in identity and loyalty. He had served Germany in war. He had converted. Yet when the Nazis rose to power, he was still, in their eyes, Jewish. He was forced out of his position. The state he had served rejected him. He went into exile and died in 1934, displaced from the institutional world he had helped build. Haber's story can tempt us into simplistic moral accounting. Good discovery, bad man, great mind, corrupted soul. But reality is harder. Haber was not a cartoon villain. He was a product of a national culture that glorified service and power, and he embodied that culture with unusual intensity. He believed, perhaps sincerely, that science is a tool and that the state decides its highest use. He also lived in an era when the boundaries of acceptable warfare were collapsing under industrial pressure. Yet none of that dissolves responsibility. It only clarifies how responsibility operates. Haber made choices. He rationalized them. He applied his genius not only to feeding humanity, but to weaponizing chemistry. So how should we remember Fritz Haber? We should remember him as the chemist who pulled bread from air and poison from science. We should remember him as the embodiment of discovery's double edge, where the same process that fertilizes fields can supply explosives, and the same expertise that stabilizes life can destabilize ethics. We should remember that scientific knowledge does not carry its own moral direction. Humans supply the direction, and humans often supply it under the influence of fear, nationalism, ambition, and the desire to be useful to power. We should also remember the human costs hidden behind abstract phrases like chemical warfare. The victims in trenches were not variables in an equation. They were bodies that could not breathe, eyes that burned, minds that panicked in a cloud that turned air into weapon. When we speak of Haber's achievements, we must refuse the comfort of distance. If you want a final image, picture a field of wheat made possible by synthetic fertilizer, then picture a battlefield where the wind carries chlorine. Same chemistry, different decision. That is Haber's legacy in one breath. You have been listening to Scientific Giants Who Changed the World. Today we followed Fritz Haber from the industrial miracle of ammonia synthesis to the moral catastrophe of chemical warfare, from the promise of feeding the world to the temptation to break it. In our next season, we will turn toward life, genes, and the human animal, beginning with Gregor Mendel, a monk whose quiet pea plant ratios uncovered the basic laws of inheritance. Until then, thank you for your attention and your time. This episode was written as a continuous story for the year, because Haber's life cannot be understood through verdict alone. It has to be lived through as a sequence of problems and choices, until you feel how discovery becomes history, and how history judges the uses we make of knowledge.